Well, good morning or afternoon or evening, I guess, whichever the case may be when you listen to this. This is something quite strange and new for all of us, isn't it? To not be meeting together on the Lord's Day for corporate worship and the preaching of God's Word. Although I do trust that you are meeting as a family and that even though in our separate homes, we are still together united in our worship of God around His Word and proclaiming His praises in song. Now, I know there may be some varying opinions about whether this is the right thing to do, to not be meeting corporately for a period of time. And I recognize that. I know that on both sides of the decision to keep meeting as a church or not to keep meeting as a church, on both sides of that, there are very good intentions and a desire to do what is right and prudent. So we want to be those who are very gracious with each other and with other brothers and sisters whose convictions differ from our own. We're at a point right now where a lot of things are changing very quickly. You know, whether it's school schedules, work schedules, airline flight schedules, business schedules and procedures, financial markets, all of it's changing, right? From one day to the next, it seems, or at least 1 week to the next. And so in times like this, you know, it is good for us to remember what hasn't changed. What doesn't change? Who doesn't change? And that is our God. His ways, His word, His character, His promises. And so rather than turning this week to where we would have been in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, I want instead to look at a psalm that focuses our heart and our attention to our great God, who is over all that we see, reigning over every circumstance, who is not told what he can or cannot do, but instead does everything that he pleases. This is Psalm 115, and I'll be reading verses 1 through 13. Psalm 115. Not to us, O Lord, not to us, but to your name give glory. For the sake of your steadfast love and your faithfulness. Why should the nations say, "Where is their God?" Our God is in the heavens. He does all that he pleases. Their idols are silver and gold, the work of human hands. They have mouths but do not speak, eyes but do not see. They have ears but do not hear, noses but do not smell. They have hands but do not feel, feet but do not walk, and they do not make a sound in their throat. Those who make them become like them. So do all who trust in them. O Israel, trust in the Lord. He is their help and their shield. O house of Aaron, trust in the Lord. He is their help and their shield. You who fear the Lord, trust in the Lord. He is their help and their shield. The Lord has remembered us. He will bless us. He will bless the house of Israel. He will bless the house of Aaron. He will bless those who fear the Lord, both the small and the great. So, you know, it would seem that the psalmist wrote this, Psalm 115, he wrote this at a very difficult time in Israel's experience. It was a time where those around them would have been able to look at Israel and mock, "Where is your God? Where is he now?" It was not a time where Israel looked or felt particularly strong. It was not a time where Israel appeared to be enjoying the blessing of God's favor and protection and help. They looked instead to be abandoned. They looked to be on their own and no match for their adversaries, whether that adversary was another nation, or famine, or plague, or themselves, their own sin. It was a time when their neighbors thought they were fools to hope in God and to trust in Him, because it appeared to them that Israel's God was nowhere to be found. And if He did exist, then He must have either been uninterested in helping or simply unable to. Now, I don't want you to think that I am viewing this psalm as a perfect reflection or a sort of analogy to our present time and circumstances. It's not that. And I am definitely not trying to equate Israel with the United States. But I am saying that what many Israelites probably felt during this period referenced in the psalm is what many people may likewise be feeling now because of their circumstances. And those circumstances, they may or may not have anything at all to do with a pandemic. Now, for many of them, they do. It does. Right? Many do worry about their work and about their paychecks continuing to come in. Many do worry about those investments they were counting on for retirement that just dropped 20 or 30%. Many do worry about how they're going to figure out the family schedule when kids are suddenly home and not in school. And some do also worry about getting sick, or about their parents getting sick. But you know, even if none of those things are a concern to you at the moment, and they very well may not be, this psalm should still feel very relevant to you. Because, you know, it doesn't take a pandemic to convince us that we live in a fallen world. There are many things, and there always have been many things, that cause us great distress. Yes, there is sickness, there is death, there is the pain of strained or broken relationships, divorce, children that break your heart. And on top of all of that, there is, of course, the most distressing thing of all, our own sin. Our own sin. What is more discouraging than our repeated failure to love and obey God as we long to? What leaves us more broken and weak and depressed than our sin? And what, more than our sin, causes the world around us to mock and to ask, where is their God? I mean, how is that Christian really any different from us? When I read that question in verse 2, why should the nations say, where is their God? You know, I can't help but think that, look, it's one thing for the world to look at all the circumstances that surround us and to conclude, it doesn't look like God is among them. Their lives are no easier than anyone else's. But it's another thing, quite another thing, for them to look at our lives, to listen to our words, to notice our attitudes, and then from that to say, where is their God? It doesn't look like or sound like God is among them, or at least I don't even get the impression that they think he is. I understand that we live in a fallen world, and living in a fallen world means that disappointment is real. Hardship and pain are real. Times of discouragement are to be expected. But even while all of that is true, there is another truth, a greater and more precious truth that we need to keep in front of our eyes. Our God is in the heavens. Our God is in the heavens, and he does all that he pleases. Yes, things may not be going your way. Right? You may have problems at work, or problems in your marriage, or problems with your kids, or with certain brothers or sisters at church. That doesn't mean that God is absent. It doesn't mean he does not see. It doesn't mean that he does not care. It doesn't mean that he lacks the power to act. He sees and oversees absolutely everything. He orders it all. What we need to keep in mind always is that the things that you see in this life, in this world, that may so worry you, or upset you, or anger you, or cause you to lose heart and grow discouraged, and I don't mean just a virus, I mean all of the things that we experience in this life that are hard, that are discouraging, that are upsetting. Look, always remember this, those circumstances don't rule the day, God does. Those circumstances are ruled, governed, directed by the sovereign hand of God. Our God is in the heavens. He is over all. He rules over all. He is not affected or limited by what affects and limits us. Nothing stops him from doing whatever he wills. He does everything he pleases, which means that everything he doesn't do, every pain he doesn't relieve, every sickness or wound that he doesn't heal, everything that's broken that he doesn't yet mend, every tragedy that he doesn't stop, he doesn't, not because he can't, he doesn't for a very good reason. And that reason is tied to what the psalmist appeals to in verses 1 and 2, the promotion of his glory. not our glory, His glory. And even though right now you may not be able to understand how this could be part of it, it will also be to more greatly demonstrate His steadfast love and faithfulness. Everything He does and everything He doesn't do is ultimately to promote His glory and vindicate His character. And so that's where the psalmist runs with his appeal, right? That's where he runs with his appeal for aid. That's what he grounds his request upon. Don't do it for us. We don't deserve it. But do it for the sake of your own reputation. Do it for your glory. Do it to vindicate your character of steadfast love and faithfulness. Do it for those reasons, O Lord. You know, it is easy to say that God does everything for His own glory. But it is much harder to believe it when we come to understand that everything actually includes the very things that are causing us so much grief and discouragement. The hardships at work, the hardships at home, in your marriage, with your spouse, with your children, with your ailing parents, the things we so wish would change. He's ordained it all for His glory. And that should give us a new kind of perspective from which to view hardships and tragedies and what are truly painful experiences and losses and disappointments. Because if I can believe that the primary reason, not the only reason, but the primary reason this is happening is for the promotion of God's glory, then maybe I can be content with it. Maybe that's enough. Maybe that's more than enough. It doesn't mean losses don't hurt. It doesn't mean that losing a child or losing a spouse doesn't hurt incredibly, but it does mean that we learn to see that losses are not just losses. They are gain. They are accomplishing something. They are the means by which God will receive greater glory. And that must be our greater concern and desire. More than our desire to be comfortable and temporarily happy, more than our desire to avoid hardship and pain and loss, we must desire that God be glorified. And so we can say, if this is the way, Lord, that You will get greater glory for Yourself, then so be it. Do whatever it takes. And you know what? He will. He will do whatever it takes because our God is in the heavens. And He does all that He pleases. Now, a God like that, who has power and authority to do everything or stop everything, a God whose decrees order absolutely every molecule in the universe so that all things happen according to His will and nothing happens apart from His will, that is a God, the only God, that it makes sense to bring our every request to. Right? I mean, after all, why would we appeal to someone or something that has no power to act? If you come to me asking for a bigger tax refund, I mean, you're wasting your breath, right? I don't have any power or authority to act on your behalf in that matter. We appeal to those with power, which means that in everything we should be appealing to God, hoping in Him, trusting in Him. But the psalmist says, not everyone does that. In fact, most do not. Where instead do they turn? Who do most appeal to? Their idols. The world looks for help and hope in every place but the Lord. The psalmist writes, their idols are silver and gold, the work of human hands. They have mouths but do not speak. They have eyes but do not see. They have ears but do not hear. Noses but do not smell. They have hands but do not feel. Feet but do not walk. And they do not make a sound in their throat. Those who make them become like them. So do all who trust in them. Rather than trusting in and hoping in the one who has all power to act, the world instead looks to their idols. The things their own hands have made. Their money. Their possessions, their job, the stock market, the politicians they've elected, science and medicine and education, these are the things that they are trusting in and hoping will make all things right. that will bring security and peace and joy and satisfaction. But in and of themselves, those things are nothing but vain idols. They are completely powerless to do anything unless God picks them up as an instrument in his hands. If he doesn't, they're worthless. Completely worthless. And the psalmist adds, those who trust in them will be like them. We would be fools, absolute fools, to trust in what our hands or anyone else's hands have made. Rather than appealing in everything to the only God who has power to act. And that doesn't mean he won't use the lifeless stone and wood that some turn into idols and fashion them into instruments in his hands, but our hope must always remain in the one who wields those instruments and not in the instruments themselves. I mean, it's just like, I don't trust that a scalpel will perform a great surgery. But I do think that a competent surgeon could use that scalpel to do exactly what he wants. Our hope and our trust are misplaced when they are in the instruments and not in the God who uses them however he pleases. And so the psalmist urges us to direct our hope and our trust to the Almighty God. O Israel, trust in the Lord. He is their help and their shield. O house of Aaron, trust in the Lord. He is their help and their shield. You who fear the Lord, trust in the Lord. He is their help and their shield. The psalmist is directing this refrain to three different groups. O Israel, he says in verse 9. O house of Aaron, he says in verse 10. O you who fear the Lord, he says in verse 11. In other words, whether you are just one of those, you know, quote-unquote lay Israelites, part of the general Israelite population, or one of the priests who ministers in the temple, or a God-fearing Gentile who has come to follow Israel's God, whoever you are, the Lord is the only worthy object of your trust. He is your help and shield, and not more for the priest than for the lowliest. The non-Israelite convert, he is to both the same. He is to all his people the same. He is your help and your shield. We are not just encouraged, we are commanded to place all of our hope and our trust in the Almighty God. Why look elsewhere? Why direct your appeal to idols and not to the God who reigns in heaven, who has authority and power to do all that he pleases? Especially when we know that he is pleased. He is pleased to be the help and the shield of those who take refuge in him. He is pleased to prove his love and faithfulness to all who hope in him. When the psalmist began with that appeal to God's glory, he understood very well that God's glory is not unrelated to our good. He understood that God's glory is magnified in the demonstration of his goodness to us, his love and faithfulness and mercy toward us. And so he can say with absolute confidence in verses 12 and 13, the Lord remembers us and will bless us. He will bless his people Israel. He will bless the house of Aaron. He will bless those who fear the Lord, small and great alike. And there we see again those three groups, lay Israelites, priests, and Gentile God-fearers, each equally the object of God's favor and blessing, the small and great alike. The Lord loves to vindicate his reputation as the Almighty, faithful, kind, and merciful God. He is more willing to show us his grace than we are willing to believe. You know, Paul asked in Romans 8:32, he who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also with him graciously give us all things? The point is that if God has already proven to be infinitely gracious by providing for his people the greatest and most costly gift of grace that could ever be given, by providing his son, Jesus Christ, to be our sin bearer and substitute, the sacrifice to satisfy our guilt, if he has done that already, if he has proved the extent of his mercy and grace in that way already, then what makes us think that we cannot approach him for grace and mercy and help for every other lesser need? one of the hardest things to believe as a Christian is that God actually loves us and cares about us the way he says he does. He is the most gracious God, full of mercy and compassion toward his people. Cast your burdens upon the Lord because he cares for you. He cares for you. He really does. Draw near to his throne of grace to find mercy and help in time of need. Listen, he's the one who's told you to do that. Those are his words, right? That's all his idea. Now, that doesn't mean that our God then promises to do whatever we ask. No, he does whatever he pleases, not necessarily whatever we please. But like I said before, he is pleased to prove his power and mercy and faithfulness to those who trust and hope in him. So let us be encouraged today, as in every day, to trust and hope in him. You who fear the Lord, trust in the Lord. He is your help and your shield.